Greetings and salutations, everyone. This is Leonard Maltin, and you're listening to Maltin on Movies. And my cohort, co-star, co-critic.
I've always liked partner in crime. I know it gets used a lot, but I just like the idea of a father-daughter team, partner in crime.
Okay. Well, my partner in crime today is
like
my daughter.
Like in the movies.
My daughter, Jessie. Hi, Jess.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Welcome back. Oh, thanks, Daddy.
And Jessie actually came up with the idea for today's show.
I do that sometimes.
Which is something we should have done long ago, actually.
Well, so if you ever go to a Lemley Theater, we have several of them here,
in Los Angeles.
They have one of my favorite sort of campaigns, which is all about if you – they have T-shirts that say, if you can read this T-shirt, you can read subtitles. And because people just tend to be kind of afraid – of foreign films.
Americans have been that for years.
Yeah.
What's changing, which I find encouraging,
yes,
is a greater number every year of films, mainstream movies, have scenes set in foreign countries. And during those scenes, they show subtitles.
Yep. It's sort of like we're just going to give you a little – we're going to ease you into this. We're going to give you a little bit at a time so you don't get scared. Don't want to scare anybody.
Yeah.
But we're going to give you a little bit of foreign film. And that's sort of – it's almost the equivalent of when someone tells you they like all music except opera and country. That's a bit how I feel when someone says, oh, I love watching all kinds of movies except foreign films. And I do understand, you know, if I'm home and I'm relaxing, I tend not to watch a foreign film on TV because I don't want to – I don't feel like it. It does require a little bit of work. And I don't feel like reading, so it's not necessarily my go-to. But if there's something that I hear about as just being a phenomenal motion picture, then absolutely I love – especially now there's so many ways to view things. And so you can watch them on TV and bigger TVs, so really see them properly.
Mm-hmm. And they've actually improved the quality of subtitles.
They've done that.
They are clearer than they used to
be. I will say, going back to some of the films that we saw, including some that we'll be speaking about a little bit today, I remember watching them and going – Why are the subtitles in white? The white keeps blending in, and I can't read what they're saying. You know, and it sounds silly, but it's true.
I remember my experience of teaching at USC to a large and diverse class that when Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon came out and became such a sleeper,
yep,
and people said, "Hey, this is the coolest movie ever." A bunch of them went to see it and then said, "No. It has subtitles.
Wait a second.
I got to read.
Wait a second."
Yeah, they were very, very
disappointed. Why can't it just be people jumping from tree to tree?
But then I had an opportunity at the beginning of my January semester to show on the very first night of class, City of God, an incredible Brazilian film. And I'd seen it. And I knew how powerful it was. But I had a new class that I hadn't broken in yet. I said, gee, do I dare open the semester with a foreign language film with subtitles? But I thought that this film is so gripping, so compelling, I thought and I hoped it would overcome that obstacle, and it did.
And we've had lots of really interesting experiences through my dad's class. He's been 17 years. He's been teaching at USC. We've mentioned this before. But it is really interesting to sit in a class like that. It's 360 kids.
Most of them not film
students. Most of them not film students. It varies, obviously. Every semester it varies. But it's really interesting because you do get to see kids who would probably never give certain things a try. Nothing against them. Again, it's just sort of what – we're all attracted to different things. But I love that this makes them – sort of give something a chance that they wouldn't necessarily go for on their own.
Yes, and when it works,
yeah,
and it's successful, it's a minor triumph, and
yeah.
I feel like, all right, I've accomplished something.
Yeah,
they've seen
yeah.
at least one
yep.
foreign language film with subtitles, and they understand that it's doable.
Yep, which I will actually will lead into the first film that we wanted to bring up. It's called Nora's Will. It's a Mexican film, but as you know, whenever nowadays when you go to read about when you go to look at a film and you see all the different countries affiliated, there's about 8,000 different, you know, it was produced here and done here. But Nora's Will, my dad, we show that at my dad's class, and it Well, the first thing, and jumping ahead ever so slightly, by the end of the film, I was sobbing. And the director slash writer, this lovely woman, comes in, and I go up to her going, and she obviously had gotten that response before and just sort of patted me on the shoulder, like, there, little girl, you'll be fine. And yeah. I'm just blubbering away.
This film was distributed by a very interesting and individualistic distributor called Menemsha Films. They have good taste. They pick up and they acquire interesting, small-scale movies. Many of them of Jewish interest.
Yeah.
And this is one of their big scores.
Yep.
I think, because just a completely disarming film, a film that you don't expect to see from the country of Mexico. For one thing, I didn't know that there was a substantial Jewish community in Mexico City.
That was the first, but not just a substantial Jewish community, an Orthodox community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which there too, I mean, that's a whole other step. Jews, we tend to wander. So that much I wasn't surprised at. But to have an Orthodox community, a large Orthodox community, that did surprise me. Now, if you IMDb the film, the year it comes up with is 2008. We think we actually saw it probably a little bit later than that.
A little later, yeah.
But it's just without giving anything away.
Well, all right, we can say this much. It's a bittersweet comedy.
Yep.
So it is mostly a humorous film.
Yes.
But it has serious underpinnings.
Yes.
It's about a Jewish family dealing with the death of its matriarch on the eve of Passover. And the main character is Nora's ex-husband. It's played by Fernando Luján, who's a veteran actor. Reminiscent of some other Latin and European actors. He reminded me of Fernando Rey, if you remember Fernando Rey, the guy who is the mysterious man in The French Connection. He's in Buñuel films. He's a magnificent actor. This fellow is well-known in Mexico, well-known, I think, as a comedic actor in Mexico, but this is a serious role. His character he's pragmatic. He's unsentimental. But he ultimately becomes kind of the straight man for this colorful parade of people who invade his late wife's apartment. They're divorced, but they remain close in the days following her death.
When Jew info, when a Jewish person passes away, the body is not supposed to be left alone. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, there are rabbis or rabbinical students, someone, even outside of the family, as I say, who will come and just sort of stay with the body. And so that's one of the other characters in the film is now this guy who's gone into this house. And it's, there's a fella in your house who's taking care of the body of the person you can't bury because it's a Jewish holiday and you have to wait for the holiday to be over.
So over the next couple of days, an Orthodox rabbi, his young and somewhat inexperienced disciple, Nora's devoted Catholic housekeeper, a well-meaning cousin, and then finally Nora's son with his wife and two young daughters who don't live in town, mm-hmm. had to travel to get there. They all show up. They all become part of this, well, I don't want
circus.
To call it a circus,
it
but
is
that
a circus.
Is kind of a circus. And then there are the two little kids, the two daughters, who actually are not frightened or put off by the fact that their grandmother's corpse is lying there in bed. They treat it as a kind of an adventure, like a game of make-believe.
Yep.
That sounds grisly perhaps on the face of it, but it's not in this movie. It's very sweet and innocent.
Yep.
And that's why I use the word disarming, because you don't really know what the tone of the movie is going to be at the very outset.
No. And I have to say, there are certain films, and I don't know, I'm sure other people have some form of experience like this, but there's certain films you watch where either, for me, if anything is happening to a dog, I really want to be around my dogs because I want to be petting them. And then in this case, because this film is about family, I was really grateful to be sat next to my dad because it brought up a lot of emotions and I was crying. And that's part of it, is that you are laughing and crying. What I think we found the most realistic about, or what we liked most, was how realistic this film was in terms of dealing with a serious situation like death. Mm-hmm. Because on the one hand, there are funny moments. There are moments where you laugh, or there are moments that are ridiculous, conversations that are ridiculous, and you're allowed to laugh. At the same time, there are going to be moments when you cry, and you're allowed to cry. So I was I was thrilled to pieces that I was next to my dad, because I was just snuggling into him, you know, and going, this is very emotional.
So we'll say no more about the plot, but eventually you learn why Nora took her own life. And why her ex-husband refuses to serve the Passover dinner that she left behind. Everything is labeled. Everything is marked.
You open the fridge. Passover dinner. You open the fridge. There's a shot. And everything in the fridge, it's all little containers. And They're all labeled. Everything is labeled. And the ex-husband, he's just pissed. He's like, no, even in death, she's controlling us. Even in death, she has all the power.
Yep.
And I'm not going to give it to her.
So all hail to Mariana Cenillo.
Yeah.
Cenillo. Mariana Cenillo. My Spanish is terrible.
We said in the car, the car ride over here, I think this episode may be embarrassing because we actually do try really hard to learn how to pronounce names properly, just to give people respect. But today, I'm not even going to lie to you. It could be all downhill.
Anyway, it's just a lovely film.
It's a lovely film, and I cannot recommend it enough. Also, kind of interesting for me to hear what Hebrew sounds like with a Mexican accent. News to me. So why don't you talk about your pick? Master Moulton.
Brothers? Well, so I'm going to do a little time trip here. In 2004, I made my first real trip to the Sundance Film Festival. You're going to say, what? Why weren't you at Sundance before that? Well, I just didn't happen to go. All the years I was working for Entertainment Tonight, they never assigned me to go. And so I would have had to take time off from my job to go to Sundance for a week or 10 days on my own dime with no real credential. I could get a credential, of course, for Entertainment Tonight. But they didn't care about what was going on in Sundance, especially in those years in the early 2000s before it became such a celebrity magnet.
Yes.
But in 2004, I was asked to be on a panel. And I said, okay. And Jesse came along with me. And we arrived the day after the event began. And we went to the press office and said on this Friday afternoon, what should we see? What are people buzzing about? And a nice woman said, well, let's see. Well, there's a Danish film tonight called Brothers. I think I've heard good things about it. We still have a few tickets left. I said, done. Mm-hmm. We'll take it.
Yep.
So knowing nothing about it or its director, we trudged up Main Street to the Egyptian Theater and marched in to see Brothers. Brothers is, as I say, a Danish film directed and co-written by Susanne Bier. We'll talk a little more about her in a bit. And we were absolutely blown away.
Now, you are leaving one small factor out, though.
Yeah.
There was a name. There was a name in this motion picture.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
In our family, we have girlfriends and boyfriends. And so, you know, my mom will say, ooh, my boyfriend's in a new film. And that means Pierce Brosnan or Colin Firth. There's a couple. She's got a couple of boyfriends. Well, my dad, one of his girlfriends.
Connie Nielsen.
So when they told
stunning
us.
Stunning woman who was known best, I think, at the time for having
Gladiator.
Been in Gladiator.
Yeah.
Yes. She's done so many things since then.
But a lot of people don't know that She's Danish.
Yeah. And she was on that series with Kelsey Grammer called Boss. She played his ruthless wife in that a couple of years ago.
But so this was one of the first times we were actually going to be seeing her speaking her native tongue.
Yes. And Susanne Bier was part of the Dogma group of filmmakers who subscribed to a a practice or theory of filmmaking, which was kind of, how do we describe it, bare bones filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
No fancy tricks. Yeah, no flourishes.
No.
Reality, almost neorealism.
Yeah.
And
the camera moves with the people, but not to the degree, not like Blair Witch, I'm going to throw up style.
Yeah.
More just sort of almost fly on the wall, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's right. There are no sets. They're all practical, real locations, handheld camera. And at times the camera will come right up into their faces. I mean, that expression in your face applies to a film like this. And she broke some of the rules, which is normally something
both of us find annoying. I really don't like to see the pores on an actor's face. But every now and then, and this film is an exception, every now and then it can work.
Mm-hmm. So what is it about? The story revolves around a middle-class Danish family, which one brother has always lived up to his reputation as the black sheep. He really is the black sheep. He's just gotten out of prison. No one knows what's going to happen to him next, where he's headed, what's going to happen. The so-called good brother is happily married, father to adorable daughters, and now he has to leave them all. He has to leave his family behind to fulfill his military service in Afghanistan. And his brother, the black sheep, promises to look after the wife and kids while he's gone. Okay. We can't really tell you what happens next. It would be unthinkable to do that. But let's just say that each brother has to deal with tough choices and has to examine their own roles within that family.
Mm-hmm.
The drama is almost unbearably tense, and I mean both in the war zone and on the home front. And all of it just seems real.
Well, and part of this as well, you know, so this, again, this is 2004, so – this was before we've made quite so many war films. I think because we've now been in a war for such a long time, there are – I mean, there are TV shows. There are, you know, documentaries, this, that, that sort of focus on the people at home. Because as much as we do as we tend to go into the field to see the soldier, there's also what's happening at home and what that's like. And so this film – really sort of came early. And so you hadn't seen that before where you were dealing with the duality there of, you know, yes, the husband is at war and my God, he's in Afghanistan and, you know, it, unthinkable how frightening that is. But then also here's his wife at home with their kids, unsure of her future. And so it brings up a lot of emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it might not be quite as innovative now to some people.
Yes, that's true. Not as fresh. Perhaps.
Not as fresh, but it's a fantastic film.
Yeah, the drama is so good.
And so well made and so well acted.
Now, if the title is throwing you in any way, it's because this film was remade under the same name, Brothers, as an American movie, directed by the wonderful Irish director Jim Sheridan, who made My Left Foot, so many other good films. And it stars Jake Gyllenhaal, Tobey Maguire, and Natalie Portman.
Three really talented.
Right. So you think, okay, they have the blueprint. It's all mapped out for them how to make this film good.
Yep.
And it isn't quite as good. It isn't nearly as good.
To be honest, I didn't even watch it. The same thing, it was near the time that Let the Right One In and Let Me In happened,
mm-hmm.
where there was the original film and then they made the exact same film here in America.
Mm-hmm.
So it was interesting that both of those films got remade. I just had no desire to see the American versions, mm-hmm. of either one, because I was so taken with the originals that I didn't really feel the need to see it done another way.
Yeah, well, I agree with you, but I was obliged to see the remake.
Yes, well, you're a film critic.
Yeah, and I came away disappointed. It was an honest effort. They tried their best. It just didn't come off.
It's not necessarily a fault issue. It's not because a lot of people I know who saw the remake of Brothers thought it was really good. Again, much like Let the Right One In and Let Me In.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people said they were both really good. But if you know what's coming, if you know what's going to happen, yeah. which you do, and again, Let the Right One is the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. If you already know what's happening, it's, you know, it's like it's taking the climactic scare out.
Yeah.
And so you don't get to have that moment.
Yeah.
Or the denouement.
Yes.
I used a fancy word. Yeah. Or the denouement. You know, those things don't happen.
Yeah. It's a shame. But what this did accomplish for me was it made me a fan of Susanna Beer's work. B-I-E-R, if you wonder how she spells her name. She and her longtime screenwriting partner, Andrew Thomas Jensen, made another film shortly thereafter, which is almost as good, called After the Wedding, which got nominated for Best Foreign Language Film at the Academy Awards. Then they won Best Foreign Language Film with another film called In a Better World. So this woman has a considerable track record. Not everything has hit the bullseye. In fact, she made a film that has a notable footnote that goes with it. Jennifer Lawrence's least seen movie.
One that most people don't even know exists.
Called Serena, a period piece with Bradley Cooper and Jennifer Lawrence. You're saying, wait a minute, I never heard of that movie. How could I miss a film with Bradley Cooper and Jennifer Lawrence? Well, you missed this one.
Especially when they've been teamed.
Yeah.
More than one time.
Yeah. I never got to see it. I have to be candid. I never got to see it. It did get VOD release, and I think it opened in a theater or two or three. But so, you know, nobody bats 1,000. But she bats better than most.
Yeah.
She made a pretty good American film, her American debut, called Things We Lost in the Fire, with Halle Berry and Benicio del Toro. And now she's working on a TV series, which is going to debut in the spring, called The Night Manager, which stars Hugh Laurie, Olivia Colman, and Tom Hiddleston. You can bet I'll be waiting for that. I want to see anything this woman is involved with. She is a great, great talent. And it all began with our screening, our inadvertent screening of Brothers.
It all became a part of our lives
12
because
years
of your
ago,
crush on Connie Nielsen.
12 years ago at the Sundance Film Festival. So that's the film we're recommending, number two today,
yes.
Brothers. Not the American version, the original Danish version.
A Danish.
With subtitles.
With God forbid.
Yes. And with that, we'll take a short break and we'll be right back. Today's episode of Malton on Movies with Baron Vaughn is sponsored by Howl FM. We think you're going to like what you hear with Howl. It's kind of like Netflix for podcasts. With Howl Premium, you get exclusive access to more than 120 hours of Howl originals, featuring exclusive miniseries, comedies, and documentaries, with new episodes added every week. You get all the archives from WTF with Marc Maron, and all the Earwolf and Wolfpop shows like Comedy Bang Bang, How Did This Get Made, and Our Little Show. Plus more than 60 great comedy albums, including Baron Vaughn's Raised by Cable. Get access to all of this exclusive content on your iPhone, your Android phone, or on the web for only $4.99 a month. And with the promo code MALTIN, that's M-A-L-T-I-N, you get a full month of free trial. Nothing to lose. So to redeem your promo code, make sure you create your account on the web at Howl, H-O-W-L.fm, and then enter the code MALTIN at checkout. So go to Howl FM, use the promo code MALTIN, and you'll get a one-month free trial of Howl Premium. Check it out for yourself. Listen to Spalding Gray, or Forgotten Classics, or the Canon Commentaries, or something cool. There's a wide variety of material available to you, and I think you'll enjoy checking it out. And thanks to Howl for sponsoring. Welcome back to Malton on Movies. You get two Maltons for the price of one today.
Isn't that exciting?
And since the price is free, you can't complain. So I don't want to hear any complaints. I'm Leonard Malton.
What a way to welcome people. And yeah. I'm Jesse Malton.
And here we are. All right. Now, if somebody pitched you the idea of making a movie about the men who check passengers' tickets on the subway system in Budapest, Hungary, you'd probably say, next. And roll your eyes. But in fact, a young man named Nimrod Antal had that idea and brought it to life in a film we both love called Control, spelled K-O-N-T-R-O-L-L, Control. Now, is it a science fiction film? Not really. Yet the environment in which it unfolds isn't quite real. It takes place entirely underground.
It's hard to sort of the film takes place entirely in the subway system.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is that you feel enclosed.
Yes.
You feel like the characters do, which is they haven't seen daylight. They're all in bad moods. They're in darkness. And also
darkness and harsh fluorescent light.
Yeah.
You can hear the humming. You know that buzzy sound that old fluorescent lights make? You hear it. That sound is an element in this movie.
Absolutely. It's one that I love because as the movie goes on, there does come a point where you're going, I swear to God, if someone doesn't turn that thing off, I'm going to jump right through that screen. but again, it helps bring you to that place. And it came out in 2003, and we actually saw it in Telluride at the film festival. Now, one of the things for us, we always feel very, very fortunate to see things at film festivals, first of all, because it means you see them usually with little to no knowledge what they're about or the people in them. And what that allows you to do is just take it at face value. So you go in with no expectations and can be blown away. The other really wonderful thing is that a lot of times the actors or directors or writers or whatever it is, they are also there. So Nimrod was there with the film. So we saw it. And it has been – when friends ask me, you know, what your favorite movie is, this is one of them. And I have shown it to so many people because I just think it's fantastic.
Well, it creates a real environment, this underground environment – where there's a separate society down there made up of misfits, outcasts, renegades, and
men who are real pissed off at life.
That's right. And then these control agents who work for the metro system. They work in teams. They're openly derisive of their superiors. They compete with one another for supremacy on their turf.
Mm-hmm.
It's turf wars. And it's just an amazing film. A murder triggers the actual storyline.
Someone is pushed more than one.
Yeah.
People are being pushed in front of the trains.
Yeah.
Being murdered. And it takes this one, this fellow who's the lead character, he becomes obsessed with trying to figure out who it is, who or what. And this is where it becomes a little bit science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And as a person watching – you too start to go, well, yeah, is this real? Is this actually happening? And again, because you feel everything that they're feeling with the sounds and the enclosure, even just seeing it, you know, we always say to see things in theaters, that's the way to do it. But being in a theater in the dark, that too brings you further into this world.
Yep.
Where you go, gee, I think.
And you know, and he manages to include action,
yeah,
mystery, fantasy,
mm-hmm,
romance, black comedy, high drama. They're all part of this mosaic that becomes Control.
Yep.
And yet Nimrod, I'm calling him by his first name because we've met him several times,
yes,
now. Lovely guy. He grew up in Southern California.
Yeah. That was interesting because so Nimrod Antal. They say his name, then he comes up and goes, hi, guys. And you think,
But significantly, he told us he always felt out of place here.
Mm-hmm.
He's a Hungarian man. He went back to Hungary to attend the state film school, and Control was his first feature. And when he was making it on a shoestring budget, he never expected anybody outside of Budapest to even see the film.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that it was a film festival favorite, got, you know, attention and awards and acclaim, was just mind-blowing to him. And he was immediately swept up and given a Hollywood movie to make.
Which is fun. I have to say a surreal experience I just had is my husband and I just went to Budapest. We were just there. And we used the metro. We used the subway several times. And my husband did not understand why every single time we'd buy tickets and we'd start to walk in. And they do. The guards there are something else. We just had such a – he did not understand why I was laughing and I couldn't get over just sort of the characters we were dealing with. I said, no, you don't understand. There's this movie that I've loved for years and now I'm here and oh my God, what if there's a murder? And not that I'm dramatic or anything.
No. So Nimrod Antal has gone on to make a film called Vacancy with Luke Wilson and Kate Beckinsale. He made Predators. in 2010. He made a film that was off my radar called Metallica Through the Never with Dane DeHaan,
yeah,
talented actor.
Leonard's a big Metallica fan.
Oh, yeah.
So
and you can read that T-shirt later. And and he's just done an episode of a new or upcoming TV series called Wayward Pines with Matt Dillon and Carla Gugino.
Yeah.
So yet again, television is becoming not just an outlet, but kind of a refuge for original and talented filmmakers who are not getting the opportunities they deserve to get in the feature film arena. So good for them.
Yeah.
And good for us.
Yeah, very lucky us.
Lucky us indeed.
Lucky us.
Oh, my. We didn't pick a turkey today because we wanted to just proselytize for foreign language films.
Yeah, and the thing is, I mean, I can tell you there have been many times, again, mostly at film festivals, where we you go in and, yeah, I can't actually count how many times I've been sat in foreign films at film festivals and gone, why, God, why? and I actually have gotten up and left on occasion. There was one film I was watching where goats were getting blown up and I just said, I'm done. But the bottom line is if you haven't tried it or if you are nervous or if someone says to you, you know, oh, I don't do that. I don't do foreign films. A great thing to do, honestly, is just find something that everyone enjoys, whether it's a comedy or a drama. You know, as we've said, Nora's Will is a great – it's just a great film. It's so well made. If you are someone who enjoys really good filmmaking, you will enjoy this movie.
It's all about storytelling.
And with Control, if you are someone who enjoys a really good mystery, suspenseful film, mm-hmm, you will like Control. And with Brothers, if you're someone who really, you know, who enjoys drama, who enjoys a different type of filmmaking – then that's going to be a film for you. So I know that every now and then it can be ever so slightly daunting when words appear on a screen, but give it a shot. I promise it won't hurt.
I have yet to catch up with all of this year's 5 best foreign film nominees,
yep,
but I can recommend 2 of them.
Yep.
One is Mustang. It's officially a Turkish entry in the Academy Awards, and it takes place in Turkey. But it's a French film.
Yeah. This, like I said at the beginning of the show, more and more now, when you try to look up where films are from, they list about 17 countries.
But it's a fantastic movie, made by a very talented female writer-director.
People are going nuts. You can read about it. People are going nuts for this movie.
And the other one, which I think is considered the favorite to win at this moment, is Son of Saul from Hungary. The first film by a filmmaker named Laszlo Nemes, and it stars a very talented actor named Geza Rorig, and the whole film is told on Geza Rorig's face.
Yep.
It's a Holocaust movie, but it's not like any you've seen before. It has a unique take, if that's quite the word, on the experience of being in a concentration camp.
But also from a different point of view, from a person who is not just in the camp, a person who
was a Sonderkommando.
Yeah, which it's sort of like being a boss, except not really.
Yeah, well, they put certain Jews to work in the camps on a short-term basis. They said, all right, you will do this.
You're in charge of this.
You're in charge of this. But it extended their lives for a little while, but not – more than a couple of months usually. Mm-hmm. But they were given some measure of responsibility, horrifying responsibility, but responsibility. Anyway, those are the 2 that I've seen so far. This very weekend I'm going to be seeing a couple more, and I hope I'll see all 5 by the time of the Oscar cast. Meanwhile, I'm seeing 2 more of them this weekend. So that by the night of the Oscar show,
well, hopefully I've seen everything.
I'll have seen all
hopefully
5.
Hopefully I've caught up with everything.
That's my goal.
Every year without fail, you know, and we're lucky we get screeners. Every year I start off with a stack and I try to get through all of them and I never do. But the foreign films especially, certainly the night of the Oscars when you see clips from the films. Because a lot of times, again, if you're not someone who follows that particular category, you know, a lot of times you don't even know they exist.
Yeah.
And so you'll see a snippet and you go, wow, I really want to watch that movie.
That makes me want to watch the movie.
And that's exactly why they're nominated and exactly why you should give them a chance.
Exactly. I said exactly. You said exactly, too.
Exactly.
Should I say precisely?
Nah.
Absolutely?
Nah.
Whatever. That's our little mini survey of foreign language films. We'll do this again.
Yeah, we're gonna give you even more things you can't read or understand.
No, you can understand them all. Somebody said to me, the more specific a film is sometimes, the more universal it turns out to be.
Absolutely.
I think that's true. I really think that is the case.
Well, and again, as we always say, a good movie is a good movie.
Yep.
And it doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter if it's maybe I often bring up The Hangover only because I always tell people this. I said a good movie is a good movie. Both my mom and my dad laughed like crazy watching the movie The Hangover. So if a movie is a good movie, you will enjoy that movie. Yes, I'm looking at you. You can't see my dad's face, but if I could describe it for you, it's
not
a mixture of.
Not the example I would have chosen at this moment, but that's okay.
Yeah. It's. What would you call that face? Disdain? I'm not sure.
No. Mild shock.
There you go. Oh, mild shock.
Mild.
Just
very mild.
Just mild. Little shock. Little
folks,
shock for
thanks for joining us as always. You can find me on Twitter at Leonard Maltin. You can find me online at my website, leonardmaltin.com. I hope to see you there. We are very happy to have your support, your listenership, and we'll see you next time. Take care.
Bye-bye.
What movies deserve to be in the all-time canon of great films? How about American Beauty?
What struck me watching American Beauty is how much it felt like a period piece, even though it's only 16 years old.
Forrest Gump. This movie gets painted as a conservative movie, but this movie just hates everybody. Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Amy Heckerling cares about teenagers and understands teenagers.
Star Wars. C-3PO is terrible, and he treats his best friend really poorly all the time.
But why is he his best friend? They're just two robots. Are my blender and my toaster friends?
Join the conversation on The Canon with new episodes every Monday. Listen on Wolfpop Howl or your favorite podcast app.
Pop.
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 This has been a Wolfpop production. Executive produced by Paul Scheer, Adam Sachs, Chris Bannon, and Matt Gourley. For more information and content, visit wolfpop.com.